As consumer tastes change, so does the pressure we put on our food supply. We want more kinds of foods at lower prices, even when they're out of season. All this makes our food system vulnerable to pathogens.
The first death has been reported in California from the E. coli outbreak linked to romaine lettuce. Doctors say this particular strain of E. coli is particularly viral.
The recent romaine contamination was the largest E. coli outbreak in a decade, bigger than the 2006 contamination of spinach. It put a spotlight on the complexity of our food chain.
If you look at the food on your dinner plate, your spinach can come from California, your mangoes can come from Mexico, your cheese can come from France. All these far-flung farms can come together to create one meal, and the traceability technology has not kept up with the logistics of producing food.
Now the government and private companies are experimenting with new ways to trace what we eat, and in turn, an outbreak.
In a blockchain-enabled world, you can imagine that that could be traced back in seconds, and it wouldn't be a period of weeks or months for us to hear from numerous suppliers, and eventually the United States food system will learn there were thousands of food products that had the ingredient in it.
Food is notoriously hard to track as it travels around the world, and when bad food makes it into the supply, the longer it takes us to find the source, the more people get sick. This episode, we look at how sensor technologies, blockchain, and whole genome sequencing could make our food supply safer.
The future of everything. A look ahead from the Wall Street Journal with Jennifer Strong.
Earlier this year, starting in March, we got a reminder that the food industry is still grappling with how to produce safe products. And even something as simple as lettuce, when handled improperly, can become dangerous.
It was pretty clear that this was a severe strain of E. coli. A lot of people were being hospitalized, and that made it unique.
Jessie Newman covers agriculture for the Wall Street Journal from Chicago. She's referring to the latest big national outbreak of E. coli, a bacteria that's usually benign but can sometimes turn deadly.
That was the first inkling that the American public got of what would become a very serious and very mysterious outbreak.
Government investigators eventually linked the outbreak to romaine lettuce grown in Yuma, Arizona. As more time passed, more people got sick across more states, and they still didn't know the exact cause.
The government said that 8 inmates in an Alaska jail had fallen ill with the same strain of E. coli that had sickened other people around the country. But the inmates had eaten lettuce from whole heads of romaine, not chopped romaine, which indicated that the source of contamination was broader than they had originally thought. So the government just simply said, don't eat it.
The outbreak had a ripple effect. Grocers pulled romaine from their shelves, restaurants stopped serving it, and prices for the most popular salad green dropped by more than half. In June, the CDC declared the outbreak over. It killed 5 people and made more than 200 sick. The source? Irrigation water from canals in the region where the romaine grew. And though the lettuce is considered safe to eat again, it begs the question, why is tracing infected food so tricky?
There are so many players, producers of food, packers, truckers, logistics, warehousers, people who slice the mangoes, people who pack the mangoes. The same head of lettuce can be split apart for different stores. There's so much complexity there and so many players to get on the same page that it's been difficult.
The Wall Street Journal's Kim Nash is a reporter at CIO Journal covering corporate uses of technology. She says right now companies are only required to record where they got an ingredient and then where they sent it.
That means that in an outbreak, FDA officials, CDC scientists have to go to the companies that they think could be involved in the problem and interview each one, check records at each one, traipse through fields and inspect warehouses to try to piece together the information themselves because no one entity has an overview of the food web.
To make things more complicated, not all the records are even electronic.
Many small farms keep records on paper. Sometimes those records are handwritten in Spanish or Mandarin or other languages. So there's the paper issue. There's also the fact that food companies, whether they're retailers, farmers, packers, truckers, everyone who touches the food supply chain, doesn't use one technology already.
That leaves the FDA with some serious detective work.
So did a processing plant forget to clean the blades of its slicers, or did the refrigeration break down in a truck moving the food, or did irrigation runoff from a farm leak onto another farmer's property?
Some of the world's largest companies, including Walmart, Nestle, and Kroger, are betting on blockchain technology to help keep data about the food supply. They're partnering with IBM to create a ledger of every detail, from what farm a head of lettuce came from, where it was processed and packaged, to what time it hit grocery store shelves. Frank Giannis is the vice president of food safety at Walmart.
This is one of our distribution centers right here in Northwest Arkansas.
Thank you. It's huge.
Lots of food items going in here, both grocery and non-grocery.
We're in a distribution center near the company's headquarters in Bentonville, Arkansas. It's a huge warehouse with conveyor belts zigzagging overhead and forklifts zipping past us on the floor.
We often talk about a food chain, but the food system is not linear at all. If you've ever looked at the food system or tried to do a traceback exercise, it's extremely complex. And if you think about the definition of blockchain, people will say it's a distributed, decentralized, shared digital ledger. Well, the food system is a distributed, decentralized, shared food system. So if you pause to just think about that idea, it's almost as though blockchain and the food system were made to each other.
When people hear blockchain, they often think about cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin. But it can keep digital records about anything, not just money. It verifies transactions and establishes authorship that experts say can't be faked. And the encrypted data automatically updates on all participant systems.
Because farmers are putting in data, because processors are putting in data, everybody gets smarter together, as opposed to certain actors in the food system getting smarter alone. So it democratizes and it creates what we talk about, shared value, value for everyone involved. And so everyone wins.
Have you talked to farmers about this?
They're very open to this for a couple of reasons. The way the food system works is that when there's a large food scare, for example, with papayas or with mangoes or spinach, what happens is everybody's guilty until proven innocent. Consumers and even health officials might say, hey, until we identify the source, don't eat any of this product. And so farmers tell us if there's a tool that allows me to clear my good name rapidly, we're interested in that time of solution.
An outbreak can stall business for everyone involved in the food supply. For instance,
before we started our blockchain work, we actually tried to do traceability. We brought a package of sliced mangoes into our office, and I asked my team, the traceback study starts right now. And it took them 6 days, 18 hours, and 26 minutes to trace a package of sliced mangoes back to the origin, two small farms. And if you look at some of the outbreaks that have been documented in recent times, it's taken sometimes health officials weeks to trace back to source.
But with this new system,
we were able to show that we could do trace back to farm with specificity and precision in 2.2 seconds. Now, we say that's food traceability at the speed of thought. But more importantly than traceability at the speed of thought was the transparency that it provided.
Walmart and its partners, including rival Kroger, have a million items on their blockchain. Giannis takes us inside a neighborhood market, a smaller grocery-centered version of Walmart superstores, to show us how it works on the ground.
So let's take a look at some of the products that we have here. We'll start off in the produce section. So what you see here is literally a package of sliced mangoes, very similar to the ones that were included in our blockchain pilot.
He scans a code on the mangoes.
And you can see these mangoes happen to be of the Tommy variety. They came from two farms in Mexico. They went from the orchard in a day. They were at a packing house. They then traveled to the importer. They then were in the U.S. in a processing facility. They then went to our Walmart DCs and to our stores.
It's almost like FedEx tracking.
It's the equivalent of FedEx tracking, I think, maybe to the nth degree and for food.
The goal is that one day, an outbreak won't take months to solve.
In a blockchain-enabled world, you could imagine that that could be traced back in seconds, and it wouldn't be a period of weeks or months for us to hear from numerous suppliers, and eventually the United States food system to learn there were thousands of food products that had the ingredient in it. All of that would have been done literally in minutes and not months.
It will also save the company money.
So if we thought that this was something that would add cost to the food system in totality, it would be very difficult, but I think all of us involved on this project are convinced that this has huge potential to remove inefficiencies from the food system. And on balance, save money in the food system, allow it to be run more efficiently, smarter, and more sustainable.
But accountability isn't just in the hands of farmers and grocers. Though many outbreaks come from contaminated water, they can also enter the equation during shipment. Maersk is the world's largest container shipping company. We're at one of its ports in Elizabeth, New Jersey. Each one of the company's ships holds thousands of containers, which are the size of a semi-truck.
We'll need our hard hats to go up the gangway. You guys have rubber-soled shoes on.
Yep.
When crossing an ocean, things like food and pharmaceuticals need to be refrigerated so they don't spoil. But like many other steps in the food supply, this is a system of trust. There wasn't a great way to verify that standards are being met until recently.
So the ship we're standing on apparently can hold nearly 6,000 containers, like 5,800 containers. In other words, fill thousands of tractor trailers. And it feels like it, too. I've never, ever been on anything or been next to anything so large.
We're told about 9,000 containers have been loaded or unloaded here today off ships like this one, and perhaps 5,000 tractor trailers have come and gone from this lot they call the yard.
So the sky is full of these cranes that look like giant claws dropping out of the sky to pick up these containers and shuffle them around, and they're stacked 3, 4, maybe 6 deep in places. Just thousands of containers as far as the eye can see.
The refrigerated ones are now equipped with smart devices, including sensors and small modems that transmit data by satellite. Things like location, temperature, and CO2 levels.
So my name is Anne-Sophie Carlson, and I am the global head of what's called refrigerated management for the Maersk brands. Take something like citrus, for instance. When that comes in, it must go through what's called a cold treatment, and that is basically where you step down temperature over time and then slowly step it back up. And this is to make sure that insects and bacteria and so on is killed on the fruit before it enters the U.S. But when the containers arrive in the U.S., you don't have any visibility as to whether the protocol have been followed directly.
But sensors now take in all of that data and send it back to their corporate headquarters in Denmark. And she says she's working with U.S. regulators to look for ways they might be able to use it too.
With remote container management, you will be able to see exactly what the temperature has been every hour of the entire journey. So you will be able to check easily whether the protocols have been followed.
But even when protocols are followed, a key element to stopping the spread of harmful foodborne bacteria is the ability to detect its geographic origin as quickly as possible. And in College Park, Maryland, scientists like Mark Allard at the FDA are doing just that.
We're here at the Center for Food Safety and Applied Nutrition here at the US FDA. I'm glad to see you're wearing your lab coat and glasses. There's lots of deadly bacteria here. It's being carefully handled, but essentially we're studying many of the bacteria we discover during outbreak investigations.
To track bacteria, scientists look closely at its DNA. It's a roadmap of sorts that can more quickly solve outbreaks.
So the first step is DNA isolation. Usually the week starts on a Monday of growing up bacteria because you need a certain quantity of it to produce the DNA.
To isolate and analyze genetic material, they need lots of it, so they make more copies. Then an instrument called a sequencer reads them like a string of letters. It takes about a day to collect all the data.
And then we transfer all of that genetic information into our high-performance computing and do data analysis and interpretation.
That analysis can identify which bacteria are the culprit and even where they came from.
And if we act on this quickly, what we think is we can stop the outbreak from happening faster. So we've now seen more outbreaks, but they're smaller and they don't last as long.
But the sequencing machines needed to get to this point can be huge, too big to bring to farms and fields. So scientists are developing more mobile devices.
I'm going to slowly reach into my pocket and take out this small sequencing device that's sort of about half the size of a deck of cards. And this is the digital equivalent of a sequencing device. And so we are envisioning the future of genomics is a mobile laboratory in a backpack. So instead of bringing the food and the bacteria to the laboratory, we can bring the laboratory to the inspection site.
Yet at the end of the day, all the technology in the world can't solve the original problem, sanitation on farms and at processing facilities. But it will help us more quickly pinpoint the origin of an outbreak, saving companies money, saving uncontaminated food from being thrown out, and ultimately, saving lives. The Future of Everything is a production of The Wall Street Journal. This episode was produced by Kristen Schwab, Kim Nash, Anthony Green, Daniela Hernandez, Laura Sim, Garrett Crow, and Brian Gutierrez, with help from Jesse Newman. Our technical director is Jacob Gorski. John Wardock is the executive producer of WSJ Podcasts. Stan Parrish is the editor-in-chief of The Future of Everything. Thanks for listening. I'm Jennifer Strong in the newsroom in New York.